KCMO.
The following is a paid program and does not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of Cumulus Media and FM 103.7 and AM 710 KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk. Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Okay. This was a great week. Weird science, sci-fi, ghosts, Fortean, the whole nine yards, a little bit of everything, something for everyone. My guest, we're going to get into extra dimensional as opposed to extraterrestrial, and we're going to find out why. X-Man, former FBI Special Agent Investigator John D'Souza coming up in a few minutes or so. All right, first the headlines. Did you see the one about the head transplant? The doctor, ready to do this. The volunteer, human patient, is ready. And I posted the links on Wendy's Coffee House, the website, okay? So you can check out all that if you would like to. He does have evidence of how he has done this surgery on animals. I did not watch them, and I did not post the link, but it's in his stuff. So supposedly, the Chinese citizen is supposed to do this. Apparently, they had at one point a Russian who was on board, and I don't know what happened to him, but he's no longer there. And they're going to do, in the next couple of months or so, they're planning to do a briefing. Now, this is funny. Dr. Sergio Canavero, he says he's the one who's going to do it, and he has a medical team. Dr. Ren Xiaoping, and excuse me if I'm butchering these names, but Dr. Ren is supposed to hold a briefing in 2 months, according to Dr. Canavero. Dr. Ren, however, is saying officials with Dr. Ren's office hospital said no. This is different than the proposed head transplant you've been hearing about. Okay, so the two doctors need to come together on this before anything happens. And we'll see what patient ends up volunteering for that. And yeah, they're supposed to do the head transplant, put it on a cadaver, and things will be good to go. Now, they tried this with a monkey a few years back. It didn't end well, okay? The monkey survived the graft and, however, was paralyzed, and it was basically rejected the new body. Okay, so there you go. Weird science on top of everything. Ghost busted. Did you see the one about the little girl who was on the trail cam and everybody, oh, it's a ghost. Oh, yeah. And somebody said, well, who in their right mind would let a little girl go out and play on the trails all by herself? That can't be real. It has to be a ghost. Well, her grandfather. Apparently, they've been testing a bike or something out on the trails, and she was doing her little happy dance, and that was what was on the trail cam, and no, it's not a ghost. Oh, darn it. It's just burst everybody's bubble. They had everybody all excited. They wanted, you know, footage so they could examine it and see what was going on. And this is probably what happens to a lot of our trail cam footage. We just don't know. Like the one with the guy who looks almost exactly like, well, I'm a dwarf. He's a gnome. He's in between, you know, a brownie, a pixie, something like that. Almost exactly, whatever that is. Anyway, I don't know if you've seen that one. The Bigfoot one gets a lot of coverage in that respect, too. And shortly after the interview on NPR about all of the worry with what was going on with Nessie, then that Nessie was no longer in the news and probably had departed, abducted or something, there was a sighting. Yes, Nessie's back. You know, it's the kind of the blurry, almost, it's there, not quite like that trail cam. But yeah, so Nessie's back in action. You can follow Nessie tracker Gary Campbell on Twitter. All right. You can also follow the queen of Twitter, J.K. Rowling. Oh, and not the queen, who's the parody of the queen and fun to follow, or the king of Twitter, which that would be Stephen King. All right, so stuff like that. And Stephen Hawking has given us a deadline. We need to get off the planet before we become extinct. And that would be good to do within 100 years, if it doesn't happen sooner. But 100 years is what he's objectively, optimistically forecasting as our time for this. Because at this point, we have to have somewhere else to go. It just, you know, us and the animals and an ark out there in space. Yeah, saying hi to all the unsuspecting, not earthlings, giving us shelter. All right, CNBC, that's where that is. Ridley Scott says aliens are out there, and if and when we meet them, we're dead. For the not-so-optimistic outlook, and his movie Covenant would show you why he has no optimistic outlook on aliens. John D'Souza says they're just extra-dimensional or trans-dimensional, or they're here, but on a different wavelength. And that's what I like about it, because I think there are a lot of unanswered questions that we got to ask the right questions first. So his stuff is fascinating. I've got a little bit more UFO stuff here, just in case you want to know. We are up 31% over this time last year for UFO sightings. And Kansas has two of them, Hutchinson and Lansing. Those were just recent. Okay, so you can check that out. Reviewer Earl Gray on the UFO desk reference. Earl Gray, yes, I like the name, is a member of the board of directors of MUFON, LA, and says that Cheryl Costa and Linda Miller have given a great resource to anybody interested in the field. All right. Every reported UFO sighting in the U.S. for the last 16 years. So there you go. You want to know where it is, who's happened and who hasn't happened, and who's been on that local sighting for the trail cam. They're there. Thank you for tuning in. It's Wendy's Coffee House. My guest up next, FBI retired X-Man, John D'Souza on Wendy's Coffee House.
KCMO.
Wendy's Coffee House. Thank you for listening. My guest, John D'Souza, X-Man, FBI special agent investigator for over 20 years, and he has a whole lot of X-Files in that collection. It's impressive. If you haven't read the books, I'll tell you a couple of them. He has two, and he's got a few more on the way, but to get you started, The Extra Dimensionals is a good one to try, and that's True Tales and Concepts of Alien Visitors. It's available on Kindle, it's available Amazon, available on his website. John, that's the first book, and you have another book as well on paranormal. Hey, thank you. I've talked to you before, but I'm glad to be able to talk with you again.
Thank you, Wendy. I'm so happy to be with you here again on your show. It is such a great pleasure and an honor for me, and to be able to talk about these subjects that are so very important, I think.
Well, the other book was The Para Investigators, and you've up close and personal had, I think this is what helped get you started on this topic, your own personal sightings as a kid.
Absolutely, I did. I think I was about 9 years old, and I remember it like it happened yesterday. I was out with my parents, and we were out at some kind of a gathering, some kind of a rented hall for a wedding reception with probably a few hundred other people in the middle of New York City. And it was late at night, and I went out with a bunch of little kids, and we all went out. It was 1 a.m, probably later than our bedtime, all of us. Kids pretty close to my age. We went out in a group, spilled out into the night, ran away from the building out into starless night. The streets were pretty deserted. I was out there, and one of the kids hit me. I went down on the sidewalk. One of the kids said, "Oh, he's hurt," and ran away. So I was looking up between two tall buildings. I looked up there, and there was a space that had no stars at all. And I was wondering what it was. It was like an inky black cloud. And then I kept looking at it to try to decipher it. And it was like the ink comes out of a squid when you try to grab it. And it out of the bottom came this old fashioned kind of looking flying saucer. It just came down with the light spinning in the bottom and just started coming down towards me. And I felt like a sort of spotlight on me. And I saw two teenage girls were on my left side, and they were just screaming their heads mm-hmm. off. Mm-hmm. And then they disappeared. I kind of kept looking up at the thing, and we both changed our mind at the same time. I took a step back, and the thing reversed course and started going back up into the cloud. And like a cartoon character jumps in the hole and pulls the hole in after it, it just went up in the cloud. The cloud disappeared, and it was gone. And I ran back to tell my parents what happened, and they were not too happy to hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Now we've got one.
In public, especially.
Okay. So that's one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as I've studied these cases, I found out that a lot of people have what I had. They have observation experiences, and then something sort of happens, and then they have contact experiences. And later I had, actually probably just a couple of weeks later, Again, when I was 9 years old, I just had an experience at home where I was just in bed late at night, and I suddenly felt something in the room had changed, and I was feeling myself lifted up off the bed and lifted up, and I saw the ceiling coming closer and closer, and they just and I just these two beings were lifting me like I was a balloon half filled with helium. And a stiff plank, and they just were going through the ceiling, and I didn't go through the ceiling. For some reason, my forehead didn't go through, and they kept on trying to lift me through, and which they were easily passing through. And for some reason, they were surprised that I could not pass through. And they, as they bumped my head against the ceiling, I was able to move my neck a little bit. And I was able to look over towards where my parents' bedroom, which was only separated by another door from my bedroom. And I was able to see, and the door was open. I was able to see them in bed. And there were two creatures there with their hands over their bed, like holding them, sort of, it seemed like they were holding them in the stasis field. And these creatures were very small. At first, I thought they were little children. And then I looked closer and I saw, I was able to crane my neck to the angle where I finally saw, could see their faces, and they had these very large black eyes. One of them looked directly at me, and I heard the only words I'd ever hear from them, actually in my head, not really out loud.
Yeah.
I heard, "He's awake," and it was like a cord got cut, and I just dumped down on my bed, very heavy, and they were gone. They were gone, and there was a silence throughout the home. And they were not there. And I wanted to wake up my parents. I wanted to do a lot. I wanted to jump. I wanted to do a lot of things. And all I did was fall asleep. And and in the morning, the adults were just kind of trying to come up with a story, a cover story for what happened.
Yeah.
And that was my contact experience at that time.
And you go into more of this in the book, but that's what's so fascinating about it. I think as a kid, you had a you at least had another perspective to bring to the equation now that you're an adult and say, okay, let's start asking you some different questions about what's going on here.
Exactly. And I know these things are real. Even when I had my observation experience when I was just observing this saucer thing, there was a spiritual component to that. And a spiritual perception component. I felt something from that vehicle, whatever it was. I felt something from it, as if, even as if it was itself alive. I felt something in myself, and I felt, and the, I felt that the thing was also collecting information. I'm scanning me, you know, retrieving information on me, just as I, and I was also getting information on it as well. And I had a feeling, I just had a feeling that there was something alive there and something alien, something that was not human. I just had that absolute sense when I had my observation experience as well. So that's the kind of sense that I bring to these things. And yet, I still realize, as Stanton Friedman said, I still realize that 95% of the UFO cases and observation cases will tend to be not true or fraud or just not enough information to prove. But we need to concern ourselves with the 5% or less of UFO cases every year that are actually unexplainable and very possibly extraterrestrial.
When you your FBI experience, did that help you in determining what might be a legit story versus something that's, you know, convoluted and completely concocted, you know, fabric?
Yeah, absolutely. Because my time in the FBI just taught me not just basic investigation and what real investigation is. That's one of the things I try to explain in my book, The Para Investigators, because people need to have a basis of what real investigation is, which has been ruined for American society by shows like CSI and other things that people just have no idea what real evidence means or what real evidence means also. People believe, because of television, people believe that evidence just means whatever you can take into a laboratory, anything you can put in a test tube, and anything that can be resolved by men in white lab coats. And that's not true. Evidence simply means anything that can makes a proposition more or less likely to be true. And that can cover a very wide range of things, from you know, a hearsay statement to a rumor, to things that people just don't accept as or even as a belief, as the authenticity of witnesses, being able to have people like Betty and Barney Hill, who come across, whose interviews we can still see today on we can just see them on the common databases today in black and white, people who come across with complete authenticity, complete truth. That is the most reliable evidence that there is, when you have witnesses that have that connection to authenticity and they can give those statements and we can all see them ourselves.
Well, and they have the daughter, is it niece, Kathleen?
Yes, Marsden.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've talked with her a couple of times. And the thing, too, is that there are other corroborating people. This continued, and the paranormal events that happened in their house. Yes. She witnessed some of that too, and so I remember when I first saw her, the look in her eyes was a little one of those you recognize from people who are suspicious and who are looking over their shoulder. And just when I first met her, she's changed in recent years, but I remember, you know, first seeing her on the circuits and thinking, wow, it had to have been an intense experience, because she still had that demeanor of somebody who had experienced something she couldn't explain.
Yeah, we call that, olden days we used to call that the thousand-yard stare. It's kind of a look, a very special look in the eyes of a person who has seen things that most of us can't imagine. And it's very common among in the UFO community and in paranormal community in general. And yes, there's things out there, and there's also people out there who want to prevent these things from being discussed, and who only have an interest in tearing down belief systems and beliefs, and they will go to any lengths to stop people from hearing these things and hearing the truth of these matters, these paranormal realities.
What are some of the countermaneuvers?
The countermaneuvers to stop people like that?
Right, uh-huh.
Oh, well, here's one. Let me give a quick PSA. I will tell people, and I'm asked this a lot, because people have a lot of these Men in Black experiences.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of which aren't, some of them can be actual intelligence agencies that want to know what's going on. Others can be perhaps the non-human Men in Black that some great writers like Nick writes about in his books. But whatever they are, this is my PSA to people. Mm-hmm. Someone tells you, anyone comes to your door, knocks on your door, and tells you that they are an FBI agent or CIA not CIA, they wouldn't say that, but any sort of authority, U.S. intelligence authority of any kind, always demand their name. And always demand their badge number before you even think about opening that door. Name and badge number. My name is John D'Souza. My badge number in the FBI was 10585. That's a number everyone knows, their badge number. If you're a sworn law enforcement officer, everyone knows their badge number. They have it memorized, and if they don't, it's right in their credentials and their badge. And everyone should always get that. Then you get that name, you get that badge number, and you can actually call a 202 Washington DC number of wherever their headquarters is, and you can verify this. You can say, hey, I'm calling because I'm a civilian, and I'm calling to make sure that this person is who they say they are, and they are from your agency, and I have their name, I have their badge number. Can you please identify them? It's very easy to do, and everyone should do that. I don't, you know, and I'm amazed that people open the doors to anyone who claims whatever they claim. They flash some sort of crackerjack, you know, some crackerjack thing that who knows what it is they're flashing at them, and they don't just do this basic safety precaution to make sure you avoid, you know, any Men in Black contact or any intelligence agency wannabe that is possibly pretending to be who they say they are.
Hey, John, we're going to take a quick break here. Again, we're talking about extra dimensionals. John D'Souza is the author guest, and a whole lot more. 14, the whole nine yards. Nick Redfern was one of the persons he mentioned.
Yeah,
the men in black. Okay, so stick around. John, when we come out of the break, I want to know the most perplexing, unusual, baffling case in all the time that you were working that you have, okay? So when we come back, hit us with something really incredible, all right? Wendy's Coffee House coming up. More John D'Souza. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio, my guest. John D'Souza was an FBI agent, investigator for over 20 years, real-life X-Files collector. And that's what I asked before we went into the break, was is there, and even you know beyond your experience with the FBI, an experience that just totally still baffles you, blows you away?
Well, yeah, but it was during my time in the FBI, probably the single most tragic and also baffling case I ever saw that had to do with the paranormal is in my book, The Para Investigators. And it's a story that I call Death by a Broken Heart. And it is the awful story of the what happened during a famous incident during the Olympic Park bombing in 1996 in Atlanta, Georgia, when we were having the Olympic Games there. And there was one night on July 27th when the Olympic Park was filled with people, just thousands of people, families, about 1 a.m. late at night, and it was just filled with thousands of people streaming everywhere. And it was a festive kind of because the Olympics had let out for the night. And it was, and there were even athletes being interviewed by media in that park. And so it was very, very busy at 1 a.m. It was just packed and busy with people enjoying the Olympic events and doing other things. And they were just running all over the place. And in the middle of this, we had Richard Jewell, who was a security guard. He was just this paunchy guy with a southern drawl nobody ever thought was really going to amount to a whole lot. But on this particular night, he was the greatest investigator in the world, because what he did was he was just walking, doing his security rounds like he's supposed to. Mm-hmm. And he happened upon one of these giant hiking bags, these things that are like almost 5 feet tall, and then you can put everything in the world in these things.
Yes.
And it was just sitting there.
Yeah.
It was just sitting there in the middle of the path. And he immediately sprang into action, and he acted not like just some security guard. I mean, he acted like a great investigator, and he immediately put up barricades around this package. He treated it as a suspicious package immediately. And he asked people to leave the area, get away from this thing, and to vacate the premises as much as they could. They were not listening to him. They were still crowding the area too close to this package. And so he started using his body. He started yelling at them. His voice rose higher, and there was like a panic in his voice. Some people recorded this, as it was going on. So he was on camera the entire time. He never touched the package at all. And you could see that he was getting kind of, he's also on CCTV as well. And so you could see that he was getting desperate to get these people out of the area. And he started just screaming at the top of his lungs and just waving his hands. And people finally started listening to him, and they started leaving the area and vacating the area around the bomb, thank goodness, because then it did go off. And ultimately, instead of killing 50 or 60 people, it killed just one person. I mean, it's still a tragedy, but he probably saved dozens of lives by what he did and his quick action and his quick thinking. The problem then was that investigators on the ground started watching these videos that I just told you about.
Yes.
And they watched them over and over and over again. And they came to a conclusion that I also came to. And that conclusion was that he knew it was a bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He did know it was a bomb.
For the wrong reason. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so they, because they were purely materially grounded investigators, the only conclusion they could come to is after watching all these videos was that the only way he could have known it was a bomb is because he planted the bomb. That was the only possible way. My conclusion was very different, of course, because that's what para investigation is. It's someone who can look beyond the material and in their investigation. And my conclusion was very different. It was that he knew it was a bomb because he remote viewed inside that package or had a vision or somehow mm-hmm. supernaturally was able to see that there was a bomb inside that package. He himself later on said when he was asked, he said he did know that it was a bomb, and he repeated that over and over again. And whenever he was pushed, he never revealed what method he used to see what was in them. He only said that he did know. And so, of course, people know the story of the Centennial Park bomber. He was accused of being the bomber, and the media went global with the story that he was the bomber. And he was destroyed. His life was destroyed in the media for about 88 days. And it was the first time I've ever seen a U.S. attorney come forward. And at the end of 88 days, they came forward and said, he is not a suspect. He is not the bomber. And of course, shortly after that, we found out Eric Robert Rudolph mm-hmm. was actually the bomber. And he was not happy that somebody else was claiming credit for his work. So he was not happy about, because he had not just done this bombing, he had done many, many other bombings as well. So that was, then his nightmare was over, but it was too late. His health was broken. And at the very young age of 44, he died. He died of, they said it was a heart attack, but his health was completely shattered.
I've got an article. I pulled up the New York Times article. I'll link that too. But it talks about that, and that he sued. He sued CNN, NBC, and he won. He won because,
successfully.
Yes,
he did. And that money could not, all that money, and it was a lot, it could not compensate him for what he was put through and what he did. All he did was save dozens of lives. He was a great, great hero, mm-hmm. this man. And he, because of what he did, a lot of people survived that night when they wouldn't have otherwise. And instead of rewarding him, they basically destroyed his life because they couldn't see beyond the physical world. And that's a tragedy of it.
That's what you're talking about, too. Just segue on into the stuff going on with the and extra dimensionals. There are different words for it, but it's a good way to at least get it in some kind of a category that we're not really seeing what's out there. We think we know, and so we call it a UFO, and it's something tangible and concrete, and there it is, and we can just capture it and put it in a net in a glass room somewhere, and that isn't really the case.
Absolutely. And people, and the reason I wrote my book The Extra Dimensionals is to bring some new thinking to this area, because what I found out in studying these cases for so many years and studying some of the very well-known cases and other cases no one's ever heard of is that alien visitors, they are real, they are visiting Earth, but they are not physical. They are not like human beings. They are not cramming themselves into little metal ships and sailing across the universe at the speed of light, like we would, from galaxy to galaxy. That's what humans would do, and that's not what they're doing. They are in their own nature. They are extra dimensional, and they are somehow beaming here. They are changing their vibration, and they are just coming here. And also, UFOs themselves, there's the ones that are real. There's nobody inside there. There's no one in there. These UFOs are actually kind of like they are kind of like golden retrievers that accompany the alien visitors and do things for them, like collect information on these civilians, on these people, and bring them back to the alien visitors, kind of like a golden retriever would bring back a bone. And so these are conclusions that I've come to over a very long period of time, and a lot of investigative clues that have to be connected one to another, and patterns that just keep on coming up again and again, that all of this is not at all what people think it is. Because, and what's funny is my first real inkling of this being the truth came from a document, and actually came from the FBI. That's the strangest thing. There was some kind of renegade FBI scientist who wrote a document that anyone can go see right now at a website called vault.fbi.gov. And if you can, you can just go to that site. It is the official site, the dumping ground for all unclassified documents, where anyone can download for free any documents that they want. But the most downloaded document in the history of government archives, in the millions, is this document I'm talking about right now. It's called a Memorandum of Importance. It is dated July 8th, 1947. And it is written by an FBI agent who also happened to be a scientist, a former scientist. And he was writing a warning to the entire scientific community.
Okay,
to
John,
tell them,
John, now we have to stop because it's time for a break. Is this a smoking gun?
Yes, that's a smoking gun.
Okay, hold on, because this is worth waiting for. We're going to give John a chance to catch his breath, and we're going to learn all about this really cool document, all right? The one everybody wants to know all about. Next on Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House, my guest, John D'Souza. A couple of books out. You want to check them out. We've been talking about them, The Para Investigators and then The Extra Dimensionals. And this is stuff that's just fascinating. And the thing is, I like... it gives us new ideas and new insight and possibly new maybe proof. I have to be careful with that word, that there's something else going on here and we might need to expand some of our categories. You're talking about the smoking gun. This is the document that everybody who goes to the vault, the files, and I have to ask you a question after you talk about this. But so what's in it?
The vault is a bunch of thousands of documents that have been declassified by the FBI, and by the way, the CIA also has a dumping ground on the net for documents. I think it's called the sitting room, something like that, or the CIA library. But this one is from the FBI, and it has documents on many, many topics. Anyone can go to this site. It's vault.fbi.gov. You can go directly to it. You don't need to depend on anyone else, any middlemen for this. And you can go, and then you go on the left, on the right side. There's this has documents on JFK assassination, on Jimmy Hoffa disappearance, for the old timers, on anything you can imagine.
It's incredible.
It has a section of cattle mutilations as well. But on the right side, there's a section, it just says unexplained phenomena. You click on that, unexplained phenomena. Then on the left side, there's going to be something that says UFO. Now you click on that, and then there's going to be various groups of documents. You go to document number, group number one, again on the left side, and you click on UFO part one. Click on that, and it will start in 1947. And there you just click on part one UFO, and you go to page 22. On page 22, there will be a document that at the top has the number 6751 and has the title in it. And it's dated July 8th, 1947, and it's called a Memorandum of Importance. Some people think the most downloaded document in history is the Guy Hotel Memorandum, the one where there's a FBI supervisor who tells Hoover, hey, Roswell is going on. And this document also, by the way, is in this database also. It's easy to find. No, it's not where an FBI supervisor told J. Edgar Hoover, hey, Roswell is real. There's a flying saucer that crashed, and they say there's a couple of alien dead bodies in it, and we need to investigate this. We need to get the jump on the Air Force. We need to make sure that we do it. That document is also in this database, probably in the same group here. But that is not the most downloaded document. It's this one, the Memorandum of Importance, where an FBI supervisor who was a scientist himself is sending out this alarming notice to the scientific community. And he's saying in this, what I call the smoking gun, he's saying that he has a special informant. He has an informant who is giving him information, supernatural information. And he says that the informant is himself supernormal. This is just an old-timey word for supernatural. And he says because of who the informant is, probably a lot of scientists will ignore what he's saying. But he says he still has to tell them because it's very, very important. And in this document, in 1947, he writes that all the conclusions that I just told you that I have developed over the years, he writes that UFOs, there's nobody in there. They are empty. the real ones. There is no one inside. And he also says they're not made out of metal. They're made out of some kind of radiant material, like plasmas. That's why I now no longer say UFOs. I say the word plasmas. I call these vehicles plasmas. He also says they are not like us. Alien visitors are not physical. They are not coming here from another solar system or another galaxy. He says they are coming here by changing their vibration to match the physical vibration of our universe, of our Earth, and then they transmit themselves from their level of existence to our level of existence temporarily. And he refers to these levels of existence as lokas, or which is an old Vedic term which he uses. And he says they are here for peaceful purposes. They are trying to see if they can exist in our universe permanently or not. And that's the main reason that they are here. And he also warns our government not to attack these UFOs, or it'll turn out real bad. It'll turn out very badly, as we saw in the Battle of Los Angeles, for instance, during World War II, when the UFOs showed up over Los Angeles and all these anti-aircraft fire shot at them with no success at all, and ended up killing a couple of people on the ground, unfortunately. So we see that a lot of his conclusions that he revealed in this document have been pretty much borne out over the years. And this document would have become front page news all over the world if a month or so later the story of Roswell had not broken and just kind of wiped this document from our memory for a very long period of time, unfortunately. And which Roswell, I believe was a double trick. I believe that was a disinfo operation, a psyop that was put together by the elite structures and the alien visitors themselves as well, to make us believe that alien visitors are physical.
John, and that they can... you waited till the very end of the show. Now talk about a hook. Okay, so Roswell was a psyop.
Yes, absolutely. It was not just a simple psyop. It was a double, triple trick. It was something I explained in my book, The Extra Dimensionals. It's a very different kind of deception. It has levels to it.
Okay, fine. There you go. The meat and potatoes right here, and you're going to have to get the book, The Extra Dimensionals. Now, I want to ask you real quick before we get out of here. You've got some other books coming out, too, and you're really kind of going great guns with this. What's next?
Yes, my next book is The Clear Hearers, True Tales and Concepts of the Great Voice, and that'll be out in a couple of months. However, in the interim, I will be appearing at Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree, California. We will be having some great speakers out there, Graham Hancock and many, many others, and May 19th to the 22nd, and that will be coming right up very soon, and it will be an amazing, amazing lecture, and my books can be found on Amazon.
Okay.
And on my website, johntamabooks.com.
Well, we'll have to connect with you again since you gave us a really good reason. All right. And if you missed any of this, I'm going to post some links to on wendyscoffeehouse.com. So check that out. In the meantime, thank you, John. Thank you. We got to go. And thank you for sharing your information. We will talk again.
Thank you, Wendy. Awesome.
All right. And thank you for listening. Anything you miss, check it out, the podcast, wendyscoffeehouse.com, or the website. Until next time, keep an open mind. There's a whole lot going on. You're part of it. See ya.